And Bill Mahler here. Let's give you the sort of the rest of Saturday rundown for WGN. We go till 3 o'clock, then it's Sports Central till 6. Hannah Stanley's in for her show Girls Night Out. 7:35, got baseball's pregame tonight out in California, Chavez Ravine. And then that game begins at 8:10, followed sometime around 11 o'clock with Nick DiGilio. So there you go. There's your lineup right through the rest of the day and into the middle of the night on WGN Radio. Here's a fact. The stock market does not always go up. Here is another fact. The stock market can go up like a rocket, and then it can sink like a rock. Joe Lopresti handles that kind of risk with something he calls proactive investing strategy. He runs Arlington Capital Management, which has offices all around Chicagoland. In fact, offices around the country. Joe is the president and senior portfolio manager of his company. Hi, Joe.
Good afternoon, Bill.
If you've got a question about investing, you can call us. Joe can answer that question, 312-981-7200, which is these days also the number you use to send us a text. What were you doing Thursday? The market loses hundreds of points. A lot of people, you know, if you watch CNBC, do you even have CNBC on in your office?
Oh, we do not.
Smart. Yeah. I mean, that tells you something, doesn't it? The people who watch CNBC, their heart rate goes up by a factor of two. They start panicking, and they start making mistakes.
Yeah, it definitely helps get the emotions kicking in, which is usually a bad thing when it comes to investment decisions.
So right out of the gate on Thursday, the Dow, everything was down. Red arrows down, down. It kept going all the day long. Why weren't you nervous?
Well, you know, we expected a decline to develop at some point. We've been talking together now for the last 3 or 4 months, Bill, and we've said that at some point the market's got to correct. We expected that would happen sometime in the middle part of this year. Whether what's, you know, 1 week doesn't make a correction, so whether the market snaps back like it has so many times during this, you know, this bull cycle, or it's the beginning of the correction. More than likely, we expect that to be developing.
A lot of people, they see this now being mentioned in sort of mainstream media, on Twitter, in the newscasts, in newspapers, bloggers. And, you know, people start getting nervous because they're not understanding of what's going on. You hear all of these conflicting data issues coming out of the government. Something's up, something else is down, and you're sort of stuck. You know, well, what do I do? How do I interpret all this?
I think that's that explains the you know, the average investor or the casual investor trying to make decisions always based off of the latest data point, you know, or news of the day. To me, that's a very difficult way to go about making decisions. Usually, it's almost always difficult to really determine what's going on in the market. But I can never remember a time when there have been so many different cross currents when it comes to what's really happening in the economy. This week is no exception. We got on Wednesday or Thursday, there was a report that said wage inflation is increasing. And the very next day in the jobs number, yesterday, in fact, wages only went up a penny over, you know, the previous report. So it's very hard to determine what's really taking place right now in the economy. And I think that's what the average investor tries to do. And therefore, they get a lot of times that deer in the headlights look where one person saying this, another person saying something else, and you just don't know what to do. So they choose to do nothing, which is always the easiest thing.
The default mode for a lot of people. There's also kind of the irrational aspects. When some good news comes out, hey, this indicates the economy is healthy. GDP, for example, which came out, I think, on Tuesday, up 4% in the spring, that would be interpreted as good news. But sometimes the market reacts negatively to so-called good news.
Yeah, up to this point, the improvement in the economy has been good news for Wall Street. But you're going to reach a point, and maybe that's where we're at that turning point now, where good news for Main Street may not be great news for Wall Street. It could be hostile for Wall Street. The economy begins to grow too fast. Then
inflation.
Market participants will not only look at inflation, but look at the Fed's response to that, maybe speeding up their exit from easy monetary policy. And even if the Fed doesn't do that, just the expectation of them potentially doing that could cause a tough couple, you know, 2 to 4 months coming up here in the market.
You know, as scary as the market can be, I mean, I said all these facts. The market goes up, it goes down. Another fact is that for most investors, there is no other place where you should be getting, should be, because there's no other place you can get the kind of returns that you can get in the market.
I agree. I think, you know, everything we're talking about here with the correction, and I've talked about how, you know, in the last several weeks, how maybe reducing your exposure to the market might be a good thing. And the reason is because if we get into an extreme correction, it could be 12%. It could be even more, but it could be very short term. Some people will just get emotional and they'll do something damaging and sell at the wrong time. However, for the next, say, 2-3 years, this is actually really good news. We want the economy to be growing on its own. We want the Fed to exit. That's what we all want. It's not always great for the market, but in the next 2-3 years, I think it will be really good for investors.
I work, I was filling in as the host for a national business show called First Business, which actually shoots out of the Weigel Broadcasting Studios. And all the traders, you know, I'm talking to them every day about things, and they say the same kind of thing, that if the market is, it's bound to have a dip at some point, but it's just the uncertainty about it, too. The idea that, okay, we've gone down 1.5% to 2.5%, depending on which index you're looking at. A correction is technically 10%. That's painful.
Right.
And a lot of people, I remember going through the 87 collapse, and I
sure,
talked to the guy handling my stock, and he was gleeful. He said, we're not selling a dime. We're sitting right here, but we had a good cash position, meaning we could start wading back in and start buying things, which we did.
Right.
And it was a wonderful experience after the fact. While it was happening, I just saw my future going up in smoke.
Yes, and that's where I think, you know, but there's a difference, right? There's times when you do want to have that sell discipline because we're going into a 30 or 40%, you know, bear market where it could last very long. That's not what we expect is happening right now. But for the average investor, it's hard to separate that out. Are we going into a correction, which would be short and, you know, recover pretty quick could be scary in the middle of it? Or are we going into a bear market, which could be many months and, you know, it could take a couple of years or longer to make that money back then?
Yeah, the 2%, let's say we lost on average 2% on Thursday and Friday. That was painful. Can you imagine?
Sure.
I mean, 10% or more would be just, I mean, headline news, people would be going ballistic. CNBC's ratings would be going through the roof because everybody's going to be watching every little move that the market makes.
Right. And you have to take that emotion out of it. That is probably going to happen, in my view. You know, the average midterm election correction, we've talked about that in past shows, is 16%. So, and in fact, the last midterm election year was 2010, and the market did drop 16%. Middle part of the year, it recovered, and it was a positive calendar year, but these corrections could be pretty scary, pretty steep, short term. But they also produce some excellent opportunities for investors that know how to put that emotion aside, and hopefully have some cash in their portfolios, you know, ahead of the correction to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
So your clients, you've been moving them to increase their cash size, anticipating a downdraft that you can capitalize upon at some point?
We have. In our managed portfolios at Arlington Capital Management, we have 55% in cash at this point. So we've locked a lot of the profits in that, you know, that have been made over the last couple of years. And now we would expect that, you know, in the next 2 to 4 months, we'll have a good opportunity to put that cash back to work at a good entry point.
312-981-7200. Just general questions about investing. You can also text us at that very same number. Again, 312-981-7200. I'm Bill Mahler. He's Joe Lopresti. He's the guy at Arlington Capital Management. Back in just a sec. We're talking with Joe Lopresti. He's the man who runs the business called Arlington Capital Management. Let me ask you a question first, Joe, and this is about Warren Buffett. And you have said that the buy and hold philosophy is somewhat discredited, and you've got all kinds of examples as to why. But isn't that Warren Buffett's basic philosophy of investing?
Well, yes and no. He is a long-term investor. He's not a passive investor, though. I think buying and holding is also associated with passive investing.
That is, you buy the stock and just park it for years on end.
Yeah, passive, you know, not making active decisions. He targets certain companies. Now, far be it for me to criticize Warren Buffett, but the majority of his gains come from actually buying and managing companies, not through the stock.
Burlington Northern Railroad, the Geico Insurance.
Exactly. Berkshire Hathaway makes a lot of their profits from managing these companies, not, you know, necessarily their stock picks.
Have you looked at his track record as a stock picker?
Not particularly. I do know that he's a long-term investor, right? So he's owned stocks like, well, I don't know if he still owns them, but Coke, for example, for many years. And you might have 6, 7, 8 years where Coke didn't do anything, right? So, but it's okay. He could stay with, you know, he could be patient through that. Somebody who needs to retire at some point may not be able to be that patient, or they can't let a 30 or 40% drop in their portfolio over the next year occur because it might take them the next 5 years to make that back.
John, you're on WGN. Thanks for calling. What's your question for Joe?
Hey, quick question. I used to work for a municipal agency, so I had my retirement tied up in a 457 through them. Mm-hmm. And what I'm wondering is, since I no longer work for them, I'm able to take my separation from that. I'm wondering, can I roll all of that into an IRA in 1 year? Or am I still kind of bound to the limits that you're allowed to contribute to an IRA in a given calendar year?
No, there should be no limits at all. And if you're no longer employed, if you've been terminated, then you can roll that over into an IRA. And I would absolutely do that because you'll have better investment choices, or really unlimited investment choices, because the plan you're in now restricts your choices more than likely.
Right. Okay. Good news. I wasn't terminated. I was able to leave on my own accord. So that's a bonus.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I didn't mean they terminated you. I mean, just you're no longer employed.
Not at all. Yeah. I understand. No, thank you for answering that question. I didn't know if I was going to be able to do that all in one shot, or if I had to do that over a couple of years. I appreciate it.
Yeah. No, we always, Bill, just for the rest of the audience, we always recommend, almost always, I should say, I can't blanket statement this, that if you're not employed and you have plans, 401ks or other types of retirement plans at former employers, you should look into rolling that over into an IRA and get it into the type of investment that could be managed better investment choices, in some cases even lower expenses, believe it or not.
Yeah, I absolutely did that. When I was working at CLTV for 14 years, I had Tribune own that property, the building we're in, and you know, it was rough. There's an incentive to buy Tribune stock. And so I did that. I remember it was $60 a share at one point. And being stupid and not having people to advise me, I stayed with it. And then it started in the, I don't know if that was late 90s, I guess. It started its long slide down.
Right.
All the way ultimately to bankruptcy. So, Joe, with the markets taking this hit right now, a lot of people are going to be waiting and wondering about Monday what's going to happen. I don't know if it's even worth prognosticating about that. But when do you make a decision as to when buying opportunities start, when there has been a sell-off?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we do is we follow a specific framework that uses actual market data. We studied bull markets of the past, and we know how they tend. No two bull markets are exactly the same, but by understanding the tendencies of a bull market, which is what we're in, we could get an idea of how this should proceed. So we look at corrections that develop during bull markets, and we know that the market tends to go through these corrections somewhat regularly. Usually once a year, you'll get a 10% correction or even more. They could be more extreme than that. It could be 12 to 16%. So we have a specific indicator that, Bill, that we call our overbought, oversold indicator, and it measures a global stock index relative to a typical bull cycle trend. And when it gets about 6 to 8% below that average trend, that's when we start buying, expecting that we're getting a good buying opportunity. So we're still a bit a ways from that.
So you have your framework, but then there are all these variables that keep happening. There's also the irrationality. Is that
sure.
a word? The irrational behavior of
sounds
markets.
Good.
Yeah. That have right. to, I don't know, how do you factor that kind of thing in?
Well, the thing is that what causes corrections could be different than what causes this correction could be different than what caused any other correction. But the market is just a response by human beings. So it's the psychological response to any potential
stimulus.
Irrationality.
Yeah.
Right. So the markets tend to behave similarly during corrections because it's the market. It doesn't have emotions.
Yeah, it's interesting to have that kind of a sober outlook because everybody's running around with their hair on fire and you're sitting there with your structure and saying, you know, we've got to stick to this, and you're always rewarded by doing that.
Well, I don't know how anybody else could do it without having a discipline or a framework that guides their decisions.
I think it's so telling that you don't have CNBC on in your office because that's sort of the screaming voice that's kind of trying to pull you away from your rational, sober assessment of things.
Exactly. The less outside influence that, you know, that we have helps us stick to our framework, and therefore we can make decisions without emotion.
Those, the men and women, though, on CB, they're smart people, and they get some interesting interviews. Don't you have curiosity, though? You want to say, oh, look, they're interviewing Warren Buffett again. Let's listen.
Every once in a while. You could always get it online, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
If you want to catch an interview.
Joe Lopresti, he runs Arlington Capital Management. Give us the phone number. Give us the website.
847-670-4030 and arlington-capital.com.
You got a report out you were giving people?
We do. We have our strategy report that we prepared for our clients. We would welcome your audience to go to our website and request that report and get an idea of the types of proactive strategies that I'm talking about today.
I'm off next week. We'll see you in two.
Thanks, Bill.